Alright, now we're official.
Damn it, I was going to complain about something. Fuck me.
Gotta put this stuff on Google Keep.
No, what, Google Keep? Like a castle?
Like your complaints.
Google Wave.
Get the
fuck out. We could all put our complaints in one place. We could share them.
I hate everything you're talking about. Why are you like this?
Somebody's got to be. Luke isn't here.
Whoop! Whoop! That's the Luke watch.
So, I've officially been moon-hooched.
Oh, buddy!
You've had the experience.
I have.
The peak sensual experience.
I got a really good picture, too.
That took... Every time they play, I take video of them playing number 9. But you gotta be careful, though. Like, who knows if they even have a fucking order to the songs they're gonna play.
Yeah.
Like...
I see.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So how homoerotic was it?
It got pretty gay.
It got pretty, yeah.
Okay. It got pretty good, gay, good. Yeah.
So they've, like, returned.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very pleased.
Yeah, they were blowing each other.
Yeah, okay. It was the best.
Right.
Yeah. You should update the title.
Did I not update the title?
Yeah, it's still Extinction.
Oh, shit, because I forgot to do it on the website. I forget. So we need Kayla back. She knows what actually to do.
Well, she won't be back recording next week.
No, she's probably going to be making cookies then.
But it's like, because we're not recording next week.
Yeah, it's probably not a good idea to record next week.
Yeah, I don't want to record next week.
There's enough to do next week.
Clean my fucking house.
Oh, yeah, you got company.
And then I'll be gone all weekend. So I got to clean it on Wednesday for Sunday.
So when is Sam getting in?
Sometime Thursday afternoon.
Nice.
And then he flies out on Monday.
Oh, good.
So figure we were going to go out to dinner with my parents because he's been wanting to meet my dad for ever.
Yeah.
$Ergio.
Yeah. Sam needs to meet Sergio. He needs to have that full-on Sergio experience.
That full experience. I thought you said Luke was in this chat.
I didn't say that.
Oh.
I said I was taking the place of Luke.
Oh.
All right. There we go.
No, don't go there. Please don't go there. Just copy. Fuck.
Are we going to get blasted out here in a second?
No. I figured out how to turn that off.
Oh, that's right.
Turns out it's just a checkbox.
Changed that.
Now, what I would love to find is it would keep my phone from going to sleep after like 5 seconds. That would kind of be my top tier situation, but I don't think that's going to happen.
There we go. Now it's different. All right, let's just get this out of the way right now. This episode will drop on the 10th. On the 13th is Sausage Fest. So if you're listening to this in the couple of days before it comes out, or when it comes out, or if you're watching a video on the stream, or if you're listening, whatever, go to sausagefeststl.com and check out what we do. We get people drunk, and we give money to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. Everything all right over there?
Yeah, I'm reading the trivia for this movie.
I meant to do that because I imagine there's probably some decent trivia for it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and get this rolling. Hey, this is Tony.
This is Anna.
This is David. What are we going to do next?
I don't know, but it's going to be probably like 3 weeks from now.
Yeah.
We have probably until next week to figure that out.
Okay. All
because right. Odds are we're not going to record next week, and we're not going to record 2 days after Sausage Fest.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of us will have con crud or be exhausted or not have voices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And by most of us, I mean me. I'll probably have all three of those.
Mm-hmm.
From the drinking, the not sleeping, and from the yelling of fuck cancer over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of the ritual?
Yeah.
Wanderlusting?
Yeah. We get a rousing chorus of fuck cancer. Like
a lot.
A lot. Like okay. We like get the whole, like everybody in line. We get them yelling and screaming. It's great. It's so good. All right. So this week we're talking about Boyhood. Anna, what'd you think?
I don't know. It was, there was a lot of, like, really genuine, I don't want to say nostalgia, because it felt more real than nostalgia. Almost like, oh, fuck, I'm back here again.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
I didn't like it. It was 2 hours and 45 minutes long.
Yes, it was.
That's 14 minutes for every year that passes in the movie. Mm-hmm. That's a long fucking movie about nothing.
It was a character study.
Yeah, so, you know I hate those.
Right. But you love talking about them.
Well, I actually don't have... All right. Well, I'll wait till we get to it.
Becca's in the chat room.
Okay.
So, I liked this movie.
God, of course you did, Tony.
I liked the feelings that it evoked. Mm-hmm. Because they felt very real.
Because mm-hmm. you could identify being an alcoholic, abusive father yourself.
Absolutely.
And that was just a recurring theme in the fucking movie.
Every guy she's with. Yeah.
Well, not Ethan Hawke. I mean, he's abusive in his own way, but not an alcoholic.
Right.
We assume. We don't see them when they're together and then they break up. So he could have been abusive and alcoholic then. Yeah. And that's why they broke up.
But he still drinks.
I thought he stopped drinking by then. That was one of the signals that he...
He did. Uh-huh. But by the end of the movie, he's drinking again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like when they go to the bar.
Okay. Oh, that's
When he goes to meet his buddy, he takes a beer from the from the green room. And he's like, yeah, you can take a beer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well... Good movie.
This is the kind of movie that I would have loved 10 years ago. Like, loved. Mm-hmm. Like, I would have spent, like, first or second year of grad school, I would have, like, loved to have gone to the Tivoli and spent all Sunday watching that movie.
Well, it would have been all Sunday.
And then I would have gone again the next weekend to see it again.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It's no Thor Ragnarok. It's not... You don't get a double viewing from me unless you're Thor Ragnarok quality.
And I'm trying to think about why I have so much more misgivings around it when I loved his time trilogy so much, mm-hmm. Linklater's time trilogy. Because essentially, in many ways, it's the same story. They just focus on the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one movie instead of three.
Wait, what trilogy?
So, Before Dawn, Before Sunset, Before Midnight.
I have no idea what we're talking
about. So, it's Ethan Hawke and Julie Delphi.
I'll do some research.
And, which, I mean...
I've been meaning to go back and see all of them, because I've only seen the first one, and I saw the first one when it came out.
All right, wow.
So, like it's been, like, a billion-teen years, because that movie was made a long-ass time ago. And I keep meaning to go back and watch them, but it's just one of those things, I never get around to it.
Yeah.
Never get around to making us do it for the podcast, which would probably be the only way I'll go back to it.
Oh, y'all haven't done it for the podcast?
No.
We should probably not do it soon.
No.
That would be give it a little
time.
David,
yeah, give it a little time.
What?
Yeah.
It's not time travel.
I know. I can only be so disappointed.
But
Before Midnight.
It's,
is the last one?
Mm-hmm.
Before Sunset and then Before Sunrise.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, so a lot of the same themes, in many ways the same story, but just from a different perspective. I mean, because so much about boyhood is what becomes of the families that people make when they're not ready to make a family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the time trilogy is about the family people were ready to make.
Okay.
But that still didn't quite last, but was a much healthier family. And then, of course... Over here, we're also focusing on the kids. Whereas that was my whole question, especially like in Before Midnight, was thinking about, so where are the girls in all this? Like, how are they? Like, the kids, in terms of like their discussions and figuring stuff out.
Oh.
Like, concern for the kids doesn't seem to play the role. At least I felt it should. Maybe that's because of a child of divorce. I mean, it sort of skims around the kids. And I thought, well, that's interesting. The kids don't... And then here he, like, focuses on
it. But is it a story of the two of them, just the two of them out together?
The last one, Before Midnight?
Yeah, like the first one. Like, the first one was...
Oh, sorry.
Like, if from memory, it's like this...
It's
manic dream of these two meeting and just having this romantic adventure with a stranger.
Yeah, it's like this gorgeous 90s movie, and they're in Paris, and they meet... and they have a train. They have trains to go in different directions. And yeah. They spend the evening together because they're just waiting for the train.
Right.
And and before midnight, this is like they're in their mid-40s or whatever.
Right.
He left his wife that he subsequently married to be with her. They have like 10-year-old children now.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're figuring out whether or not they're going to separate.
Good.
And so it's
depending on the subject matter, I can see why the kids may not come up into the discussion though. Depending on how the conversations go.
Yeah.
Just because if they're focused on what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like when you start putting the kids into play, then
yeah,
you're not being honest about
what you want.
The couple.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah. So anyway, like, it's interesting to, like, see essentially, like, many of the same processes going on.
Yeah.
And, like, but with a hyper-focus in a different direction.
Right.
Or in a different position. Yeah.
All right. Good talk.
I have a lot more to say about this.
Oh.
What?
You have 2 hours and 45 minutes of conversation. Maybe.
That may just happen. You Ooh. Don't know.
Depends on how long it takes.
Yeah, I liked the storytelling style in that it never got weighed down in trying to catch you up after they transitioned. Like there was never these expositional, like mm-hmm. awkward expositional yeah. points where it's like,
it's been a year.
Yeah. Ugh. We never see a timeline.
Yes.
The only hints at a timeline you get are physically looking at the children
yes.
aging
yes.
and the music.
Yeah.
They do some stuff with hairstyles to make the transition yeah. easier. In they the do. Middle where like the year-to-year shot, they don't change enough to really make it clear that
right.
like physically they've grown. So they change the hair to give you that.
Yeah. Well, especially when he gets his head shaved. Mm-hmm. And then
yeah.
the next time you see him, he's got long hair again.
Yeah.
And cutting to the end.
Whoa!
They picked a kid that
perfect
that aged
yeah.
into looking like
yes.
Ethan Hawke's kid.
Yes.
Like that
yes.
that was impressive.
That was lucky.
Yeah.
But also he was a good actor too, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just in many ways I thought he was which is a gamble.
It is. It is. It was a very natural acting style because I think it was more just be yourself.
Yeah. yeah.
And he was.
Yeah. Be sullen teen. Done.
Yeah.
I'll just shuffle around.
I'm an awkward teen who gives these half thought out philosophical
yeah.
Diatribes and mantras that don't really make a lot of sense unless you're 17 years old. And like I remember thinking that way once.
Yeah.
You precious summer child.
Yeah.
Yeah, like specifically the one that I'm thinking of is when she's married to the third guy,
yeah.
the ex-military guy, and like you see the confrontation with the kid, and then like you never see that guy again.
Yeah,
like and it's not an abusive confrontation. It is a confrontation that didn't need to happen and didn't need to happen that way. But it could have gotten worse.
My favorite
very
part
quickly.
Of that scene is like he stands up and then like you just hear all of these aluminum cans. It
yeah.
sounds like there were like 50 cans that he stood up into.
Yeah.
It was like, oh shit, is this a recycling plant? Oh my god.
Yeah. The way they did that, like and when he just looks at him like, all right, what are we going to do here? And he's like, you need to respect me. All right. And he just walks in like, yeah, fuck you.
Yeah, great.
Because the second guy would have probably hauled off and hit him.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
That guy was a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy was a turd.
Well, I mean, and there's just some, I mean, the whole story plays a lot with, I don't want to say inappropriate power dynamics. I mean, because, I mean, the guy's dating his student.
Oh, yeah.
She dates her student.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you have all, you know, and then the end, you have this professor who is like, well, not at the end, at his birthday party. graduation party or whatever. Yeah. Who's
like she's like
flirting with him.
Yeah, that wasn't creepy at all.
And so like there's this really like he's really interested or the movies it was really interested in the dynamics between children and adults and when things are reciprocal and when things are not not reciprocal. I mean the whole drinking scene or well and then between the father and the kids and well you don't tell us what you've been up to whether you have a girlfriend.
That was I liked that because as a parent you focus a lot on so how was your day? You know, trying to get the kids to engage with you. And it's interesting when they say, so how was your day?
Yeah.
You know, because like they turn it around. Mm-hmm. And I like that because it was like that happens. Yeah. That's the way it works.
And just like thinking about like in those power relationships, reciprocity and when it's ethical and when it's not. Leads to.
There was a lot of unethical things.
Oh, a lot of unethical reciprocity.
Yeah. In the middle of this movie, I started thinking, what is the horrible thing that's going to happen that makes this movie? Like, when is this kid going to get molested?
When is his sister
going to get beaten?
When is mom going to get murdered by one of these horrible dudes that she's... Like, I... honestly was like the last hour of the movie I had like the sense of creeping dread there's something terrible is gonna happen like and I was starting to get to the point where it was like I'm 2 hours in and I'm really enjoying this and I've got certain questions that I have about trivia about the movie so I start looking at articles but I'm like doing that skim. I don't want details, but I want to know little things. And it's like, I don't want to get the hook. I don't want to get the tragedy. I don't want to even be told that,
there is a tragedy.
And then the tragedy happens. Mm-hmm. And it's like, because it just felt like it was coming. Like it felt like there was going to be a moment that's just the moment that defines things. And it's the pivot.
That's so interesting because this
I was looking for it.
Wow, this felt exactly like the kind of movie that never comes to a crisis. To me, like part of it being almost 3 hours long and it sort of dragging and kind of having like the mental slowness, it reminded me of the slowness of growing up and the slowness of childhood where in some ways like you feel like something radical. I just remember for the longest time feeling like something radical needed to change, some crisis needed to happen.
Yeah.
Because I knew things couldn't stay the way they were, and it never happened, but I grew up.
That was the thing.
And...
that's the tragedy. Yeah. You grew up.
That's, but, you know, there was never any, thing. You know, in a stable home, like, there's no crisis. And I guess I just known so many women like her, like the mom, who, like, subtly, kind of by means of, like, the... weight of responsibility for their children and being with shitty men like deepen and grow up and that's like the rock on which they hone their characters for good or for evil some women die but a lot of women don't die
I wasn't thinking you know is his dad going to die? And is that going to be – what is going to be a defining moment? A defining moment for the character.
Yeah.
But I was thinking of this as more plot-driven because even in character studies, they try to – they take
something
a plot
happens.
Point that twists the character. Mm-hmm. Because you – like you set up the character and you set the stage and then the thing happens so that everything they've built to can mm-hmm. – can you just have that mm-hmm. jumping off point – that you know exactly how the character's mm-hmm. going to react because you've spent so much time building this character and telling you who this character is. And then mm-mm. it didn't.
Oh, he broke up with that chick.
He did?
Sheena.
That was about it.
Well, there were moments, but they weren't his moments.
Yeah.
There were moments that he got dragged along mm-hmm. with when new dad was an alcoholic abuser. It's like watching your mom getting beaten up. That's mm-hmm. that's bad. Mm-hmm. Having him order everybody around, that's horrible. Mm-hmm. Having him weirdly treat the new kids better than his own kids at different points, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
I'm trying to think of... this is the kind of... I kind of wish I had seen this like on a bigger screen or sort of in as more... I sort of watched it in chunks throughout the week and that I had sort of set somewhere quiet and away for the full duration.
There are some movies
in that way. Yeah. I feel like that this was that kind of movie where that would be necessary, to not have it broken up or not have distraction in any way. And maybe I'd get more pleasure out of it because I found it interesting. I just didn't get pleasure out of it.
Me neither.
Or a lot of pleasure. I had a few moments of pleasure, but not a lot. But I think it's because of the way that I watched it, I wasn't able to.
I actually split this into two pieces, and I hate splitting movies into two pieces. Yeah. But it was goddamn 3 hours long.
Yeah, and that's a big commitment. Week,
I did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, I watched it in probably 4 chunks.
And it felt like 6 hours.
I can't say that. Not for me.
I hate Ethan Hawke.
Oh, see, well.
And I don't like Patricia Arquette either.
I enjoyed her in this, especially later. But I'm not in general. I don't
know. What's interesting is I think Ethan Hawke was a more consistent actor throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
that fucking mustache. Based on,
well, you know, yeah, that mustache just ran his game through the fucking roof.
Notice he got that mustache, then he knocked that chick up.
That's right.
Not a coincidence, my friend.
What I think is interesting is, if I'm remembering the timing right, by the end of the movie, Patricia Arquette had been doing The Medium for a long time. Yeah. So she had a lot more acting experience by the end of the film. Where a lot of movies, you don't see a range of acting experience. You can see a range of acting styles.
Sure.
But you don't see a range of experience.
Yes.
But because this was shot over 12 years, yeah, presumably the actor will
improve.
Also, so much about, and you know, this makes me want to see it again. I'm trying to think about the way scenes were shot. And there was a lot of commentary here about gender and fatherhood and how people are like men and or not men or still boys. And I'm trying to think of the shots where you have the mom, Olivia, right? With,
I think that's right,
the kids and the fact that, yeah, with the kids. We don't see her face on that often, or talking for a long time face on. Like, there are a couple of moments, for example, when she's sort of talking back to husband number two, that kind of thing. But a lot of times she's in the background, we see her from an oblique angle.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when we're with Ethan Hawke, it's either a straight profile or straight, like, really a frontal, facial. He's, like, full in the shot. Which I think has a lot to do with, like, telling us about how they're interacting with their children and how they are with their children in different ways.
This is interesting. So I'm looking at the IMDb page. Mm-hmm. The boy was Mason, mm-hmm, MJ, yeah, Mason Jr. The IMDb cast page lists him as Mason, Patricia Arquette as mom,
mm-hmm,
Ethan Hawke as dad. They don't name the adults.
Oh, interesting. Because they do talk about the adults in that.
They do, and they
and use,
like,
their names in that.
Yeah, he's dad's Mason. Mm-hmm. When he's around his parents, he's MJ. But when he's around his friends, he's Mason.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, that happens. You have kids that have one name at home and they go by something different.
So I'm just wondering if that's also affecting how I'm, like, reading her acting as well.
Yeah, that could be
it's
it.
It's just a different kind of acting that she would be, or different sorts of things one would notice and that she would be giving off.
Well, and the director's focus of the character, mm-hmm, also, yeah, in the telling of the story, there were major life events that happened off screen.
Yeah.
Every time mom got married.
Yep.
We didn't see a wedding. We never saw a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
The closest we came to it is when we saw them come back from their honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we never saw a divorce.
Yeah.
Ever. Those major events, things that would be traumatic, impactful, and memorable, seeing your mom get married, going to a divorce hearing, having to speak to a judge, if that had to happen as part of it. Like,
but
that,
you know,
those are interesting choices
but that
to
makes
avoid
sense
it.
To me, as kids would experience that. I mean, I actually related a whole lot to this movie in terms of how my dad interacted with me post-separation. And I mean, because it's funny, a lot of the ways we experienced, or I experienced, changes in my parents' lives wasn't through the thing that happened. because I was never at my dad's wedding.
Mm.
You know, their kids don't really have to go to a divorce hearing unless something's really messed
up. Right, unless there's some kind of custody dispute. Right.
And so you, like, as a kid, you just know, like, the different house you're at. The different school you're going to. Mm-hmm. And even if you go to the wedding, that might not be that important to you. You might be, like, playing with your whatever.
Right.
Your toy, you know, like, certainly not as important as being at a new house or a new school.
I'm speaking in the terms of the movie, though.
Oh, yeah.
That the movie didn't do that.
Uh-huh.
Which I thought was really good.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
I liked those jumps, and I liked that we didn't have to go through the exposition of it. I mean, the only reason we knew where they were married because it's like, oh, how was your honeymoon? That's enough. That's all you need.
Yeah.
You don't need any more than that.
Yeah.
And that one guy was drunk and was an asshole, and now
he's gone.
We're just alone.
Yeah.
This house is too big for the three of us.
Yeah.
That's enough. He's gone. He's just gone.
Yeah.
I liked how they handled both. I like how they handled Ethan Hawke's character in that he was clearly absentee. He tried as much as he could, which was not enough, but he was a positive influence to his son.
Yeah.
And that's how it treated him. Mm-hmm. But it also didn't pull any punches with him, especially at the end of the movie, like the last scene with him and Patricia Arquette, where he's like, oh, I kind of want to help out now. And he pulls out his wallet. And it's like, I don't have any cash. I'll go get her from her purse. And it's like, oh, my God.
You're just
an asshole.
Yeah.
But that's not how his children see him, especially in how his son sees him.
Yes.
It turns out your parents are people.
Right. Yeah.
And as we've established, everyone's shitty.
I really enjoyed how that was portrayed because it didn't let him get off with just being fun dad.
Yeah.
He was still awful.
So, I mean, like, in the end, I mean, that's sort of what I was trying to figure out with his character, because my sort of, until that moment, my, like, arc for him was, all right, like, which I feel like a lot of people do, and especially, like, did.
Mm-hmm.
They have kids when they're way too young, with the wrong people, because they were way too young, and then they just parent badly.
Well, he even says
He says that with 23. Yeah.
Yeah, he says that.
And they parent badly for, you know, 15, 20 years or whatever. And then they do it again, especially men. Like, women don't do it again after 20 years.
Right.
Sometimes women do it again.
Yeah.
But, like, men do, you know, just start all over, and it's not a thing. And often are really quite good parents.
Second time around. Yeah.
My dad was a good husband the second time around. He was not the first time around. He had to learn. But, you know, so I guess it was disappointing, I guess, to sort of see, actually, he's probably not going to be a better dad. Not that much better.
She's
going to still be doing all the work.
He might. Yeah. Well,
he's improved. He got rid of his car.
Yeah.
Okay.
Minivan.
That's a big deal. He got a minivan. Still going to be doing all. He's going to be like.
Oh, absolutely.
His arc changed. His character changed, which the scope of the story. I like that his character went through something, and he changed how he saw things and how he was reacting to things because he was a dreamer.
True.
He was going to be in a band. He was going to make music. And he was going to be something. That's why he had his hot-ass GTO. And he was going to be somebody and something. And that was going to be the shit.
Yeah.
Now I'm working in insurance companies. Yeah. And now I'm doing other things.
Yeah.
And now I'm just Joe in the office and driving a minivan. Mm-hmm. And had to get rid of the GTO because we needed a van to haul the kids around in.
Yeah, that thing that change you're talking about is surrender.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
It's giving up on the dream.
Yeah, you can surrender to the life that you're going to have, but you're still always the same piece of shit you always were. That's just life.
I feel like it's a bit more complex because he made some choices there. He didn't have to get married to this new woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was slowly choosing. I don't think that's necessarily surrender because, I mean, he never, like, some people just try to live the dream until they're 60.
Yeah, but the way he talks about it
is
clearly he's not thrilled that he had to do those things. He's not thrilled that he chose to do those things. Like,
I don't
talks wistfully about
that
car.
Well, the car, but I don't feel like, I mean, I know what you mean, where some people sort of,
I was going to say he does earlier, but in the end, he's like, it's just a car.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, which is kind of like what you do when you grow up.
Yeah.
You like, it's just a car.
Give up on all the things that you love.
And it's a car.
Like the car.
Well, at some point, the car's going to break down.
Yeah.
And also, who knew that that this old ass car was going to actually retain its value and get more and be more valuable now than it was then. So I needed
That's also
something
kind of awesome. $22,000. Yeah. The GTO is awesome. $22,000 is pretty friggin' awesome too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And having a brand new vehicle that is reliable for my wife to have is great because he's also committed to being in a relationship, which he wasn't committed in. He wasn't committed to before that. He got married because that was the thing you do when you knock somebody up.
And I think like maybe why one might find the car to be more troubling than it is that we have the sense that he's a dreamer, but he's just that, a dreamer. He never had a discipline. He never had things he loved other than that car.
Mm-hmm.
That he really, like, he didn't have a musical career that he carefully tried to develop and was passionate about and was disciplined about. It's not like he gave up on something he cultivated and loved. Mm-hmm. The only thing he ever, like, really took care of was that car. And that's not, that by itself isn't a fulfilling thing. Like, a single car. Not even cars in general. Not becoming a fantastic mechanic. Like, that, there's, like, you can't live that way.
I think the other thing for me that felt like a fundamental difference is how he approached the friend who is the musician at the mm-hmm. end. It wasn't that this is my former bandmate. This isn't, you know, yeah, I could get up on stage with those guys if I wanted to. There was none of that. It was like, hey buddy, how's it going? Doing great. Glad we get to mm-hmm. hang out at your show. We hit the green room. We took a few things.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, you are my friend and you are doing this thing mm-hmm. and thank you for having us out to your show. It never felt like, oh man, I should be up there. I mm-hmm. should have been doing it. Like it never had that sense at that point.
Yeah.
So surrendering, I think for him, the dream changed. I don't know that it was necessarily surrender.
Yeah. Yeah. It changed, maybe became more tangible.
More reachable.
Yeah. And
staying a husband and being a present father to the children that I just had, like maybe that's the dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
While still trying to maintain a relationship with these children that I didn't raise.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, now the last bit makes me wonder if the dream is a phase, if that new dream is
maybe.
A phase, or maybe he's just still growing into it.
He grew into that mustache.
He could have just forgotten that he didn't have any fucking cash in his wallet. And maybe you're just reading too much into it. Because he did have them. They did have the money.
The thing is if you're pulling out your wallet to give someone cash to help them out.
How much cash you have.
You're not talking about giving somebody a 50.
Yeah.
You're talking about giving someone hundreds of dollars at least.
I couldn't. All right. That's fair.
So it would have been like, this isn't carrying around cash. This is writing someone a check mm-hmm. money. This isn't just getting cash out of a purse. That's the thing that bugged me about
One, who's carrying cash?
Me.
Ugh.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like that was a thing. Maybe I'm reading too much personal stuff into it, but I've talked with, like, that's sort of, it sounds like you carry, I guess maybe we shouldn't say this on air about you carrying a lot of cash around, it sounds like, Tony, but, like, I feel like that's a dad thing. Like, does your dad carry around? My dad used to carry around a shit ton of cash.
Really?
Yeah, and a lot of my friends, like, their dads just carry around like hundreds of dollars.
What?
Yes! And
these people you hang out with need, like, just a tenth of the paranoia I have. What if I drop my wallet into the toilet?
Exactly.
I don't carry money in my wallet.
That's what I always...
I don't carry cash in my wallet.
What?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's what I always thought, too. But
I carry
cash,
but not in my wallet. I keep it separate. Yeah. Because if somebody lifts my wallet, then I'm completely fucked.
Yeah.
Because I have no way to pay for anything then. If I keep them separate, at least I have something.
Uh-huh. I think he usually kept it in his wallet. Sometimes he had a separate money clip. But yeah. But I mean, like, I don't know. But, and so I just sort of, yeah, to me it was sort of him, like, him not knowing how much was in his wallet. It just sort of felt like a failure as a provider role.
I don't know how much is in my wallet right now.
But yeah, but I don't either, but I know it's under $5. So it's like I'm not going to be reaching into my wallet to help anybody without anything.
We could probably
like buy a Coke.
We could probably go out for a number of drinks each with the cash that's in my pocket right now.
Money bags, man.
You know what? I've got kids who, on a moment's notice, need money for something that they have to take to school with them.
Yeah, kids always need money, yeah.
Or a wife who, in another month or two, is going to be going to craft shows every weekend. Hey,
oh,
I need craft show money. Here. Yeah. Well, because I'm the one that carries the debit card, so she doesn't have a way to easily get cash. Because writing a check for cash is a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
So, I carry the debit card. For me, it's I carry the debit card, so I'm the ATM for the house.
That's valid, yeah.
Craft shows. Yeah. The O'Fallon Craft Show is the first weekend in November. And then the Edwardsville one's the weekend after that. If you want to go, get in on it. Julie will go. Oh. Julie and Aaron go to all of them.
I'm intrigued. I'm tempted.
Yeah, what's the day drinking policy on this?
We can day drink here while they're doing that. That's.
Oh, so there's like no drinking at the craft. I get, yeah, that's not that kind of a craft.
They're at the high schools. Oh, you're walking around in the high school.
Never mind.
They're big shows, but yeah.
Yeah.
Now, nothing says you can't bring a flask.
I always do. That's what I have in my wallet. 2 flasks. Just in case the first one gets emptied.
It's a huge wallet.
Yeah, it's a huge liquid wallet. It's so sticky.
Why is his ass so sticky? All right.
I don't need to make it gross.
Well, I liked the end. I really liked the end, and I liked the moment where, like the moment of the ending, because it felt like that's the end. That's the end of Boyhood, you know, and I just liked that. I liked the, like, there was a moment of maturity that happened there, and it was.
Do we feel like he successfully stepped out of Boyhood in a way his father may not have? Or do we know? Do we feel like his parents managed? Because, I mean, they were both in cycles. Like, the mom, in some ways, like, we can see her deepening and maturing in terms of her career. But, I mean, she still, like, can't manage to find a decent guy.
No, she is.
She's a dousing rod for alcoholics.
She drinks, drinks more and more and more.
AA needs to hire her.
Yeah.
To find their people. Mm-hmm. She should get hired by the police. This is the medium.
Yeah.
I feel like she drinks like academics drink. Like, those parties. Yeah. I bet that it's...
She is doing things that she thinks she should do, and doing things that she thinks she should do to help her children.
Yeah.
But at no point does she do anything to help herself.
I don't know about that.
I don't think she does anything to help herself.
I mean, at least that's what she thinks. Which is her whole breakdown when he's leaving.
Yeah. She is done.
Now what do I do?
Yeah. Now what do I do? Now the next milestone I have is death. It's like there are a lot of milestones with having adult children.
Yeah.
Like you can see them potentially get married. You can see them. I mean, he is just starting college. There's graduation. That she's still in college. There's her graduation. There's the potential for one of them or both of them getting married and having children and her being a grandparent. And like, there's so many milestones that are open to her.
You can literally do anything with your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
There could be milestones that have nothing to do with their
Yeah. Like their you can literally do anything now.
But that's all she thinks about because that's all she's been is mom. In this movie, she has only been mom. She has been a teacher. But because she was a teacher because she needed to.
But that's a really circuitous route to becoming a provider for your kids. Teaching the way she was teaching. I mean.
Oh, I thought it was just a dating, like she was just going there to pick up guys.
I mean, I guess like when I think about, because when I, the way I saw that breakdown was just like an intense emotional reaction because of the way she does family formation, because she was always obsessed with needing a nuclear family with a man in it because she thought that's what kids needed. And so that part I agree. and the way she kind of ran her home and tried to form a family and form her romantic relationships. But at the same time, she clearly had these other interests. She went to grad, I mean, going to like grad school and becoming a professor is like the least linear way to try to provide for yourself or children. Mm-hmm. It takes forever.
But by the time she was going to grad school, she was also married to a professor.
Yeah.
So at that point, her path is...
That's true.
Like, that is the path that she's on, because that's the model.
Yeah. Yeah, she just kind of took up his... Which I actually loved, because it was fascinating, because in that first scene where she's the student, you have this, like, very... This one model. I mean, I guess as somebody who teaches, this one model of learning... And one model of academia. And then when she's teaching, he's doing behaviorism. She's doing attachment theory. When it turns around, she's dressed completely differently. She has a completely different relationship to her students.
Yeah.
So it's just this like real shift in like learning and culture. That it's another sort of like shift that's happened over time.
Would that have been period accurate to...
I mean, you know, there are still like people are professors for a long time. Well, and sure. So I feel like there would have still been people, there are still people like that guy, but I feel like that's actually a more common model now, especially, like, I feel like I've known a lot of women just like her.
Okay.
Doing the same thing, kind of very similar life path and similar approach to students. And it is also, I think, accurate in that, like, attachment theory is really big right now.
Okay.
And back when I was in college, like, in 99, early 2000s, it was a bunch of men talking about behaviorism and rats and, you know, and so.
No, that's interesting just because I'm not attached to any of that line of thinking at all. So I have no experience with it.
Yeah. And it could be that I'm over identifying because I just like at every moment it was, and that's part of what I felt like made the movie in some ways kind of painful.
See, that's, I think that's the magic of the movie is that you are attaching to it.
Yeah.
Because I attached to it from the kid. Mm-hmm. From the kid's perspective, and those moments of like, because there were moments sprinkled throughout that it's like this happens. Mm-hmm. These are things that happen to you along the way.
Yeah.
Regardless of being in a single parent family or in a family that's, you know, mom and dad are still there together, siblings or not. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of kind of universality mm-hmm. to the moments that we saw. And I dug that. Mm-hmm. Like, I liked that a lot because it was like I kept feeling drawn into, yeah, I know how this is going to go. Like I remember mm-hmm. not that specific scene, sure. But like I can relate. Mm-hmm. I can relate to a lot of the things that happened.
Oh, I wanted to ask what y'all thought about the whole gaming aspect, like of that coming up over and over again, the sort of asshole second dad. Saying, you know, like, put your Tamagotchi away. I don't know. Was there something going on with that, or was I imagining it? Or was it just, like, him being a little boy doing that? Because it felt like there was a kind of a narrative that I wasn't quite getting.
I don't know.
That was sort of floating.
The only, and it may be, it may have been a narrative that was lost along the way.
I don't think it was.
I don't think it was
either. I think he would have gotten it if, yeah.
I think he, towards the end of the movie, had internalized a lot of that stuff unintentionally. Because when he's in the car with Sheena and he's talking about Facebook.
That's true.
It's like an exact echo of everyone that told him to put those games away over and over again.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Oh, God.
Because,
yeah. So
because
that's
a lot of times.
You lose your boyhood. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He literally had. He's mimicking the response of the adult males mm-hmm. in his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Put the toy away. Mm-hmm. We're having a conversation. Put the phone down. Trying to have a conversation with you.
Did the dad ever do that?
Which one?
Sorry, his biological dad, Ethan Hawke.
I don't remember him doing that.
I don't remember it. I'm just trying to think of...
But I don't remember a time when the kids weren't engaging directly with him.
Yeah.
But I feel that that's more realistic in some ways because... Yeah. The time is precious because you have such limited time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I only see you every other weekend. So I'm not going to play with my mm-hmm. phone. I'm going to engage with you because you're talking to me mm-hmm. because you seem a lot more interested in what I've done over the last 2 weeks than mom does when she sees me every day because it's what did you do today at school? Mm-hmm. It's like it's just another day. Where yeah. now it's like, oh, what did you do over the last 2 weeks at school? What did you do all last yeah. weekend? What mm-hmm. you know? Did you have a sleepover? You know, like there's the relative distance to it makes it more interesting, mm-hmm. and it makes it seem like the person is more interested in you. Like the way I think about this is like a something that I realized growing up. I went to a couple of different funerals for various people, and like the people that I was very close to, I realized that if they lost somebody, by the time you get someone at the funeral, the people who are there to visit you mm-hmm. as the, like, I remember this vividly with my best friend, Chuck. Mm-hmm. I was at his house the night the police came and told us his dad was killed in a car accident. Mm-hmm. Like I was with him when it mm-hmm. happened. A week and a half later at the funeral, you know, our group of friends were sitting there joking and cutting mm-hmm. up and laughing and having a good time. He had been intimately involved with the fact that his dad was dead
yeah.
for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And all these people who barely knew him, mm-hmm. you know, relatively speaking, mm-hmm. were heartbroken at the funeral. And it wasn't insincere. It was just the fact that that was the mm-hmm. time they chose to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when death was made real for them.
Yeah. It was, yeah. it was, you know, oh, we found out about mm-hmm. it and I was sad once and now I'm getting dressed for the funeral mm-hmm. and now I'm here at the mm-hmm. funeral. So now I'm finally allowing myself to steep mm-hmm. in these emotions. And there's his son laughing about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, he's not laughing about it. He's just dealt with this 24 hours a day for the last 10 days.
Yeah.
And you've literally dealt with this yeah. for maybe 45 mm-hmm. minutes mm-hmm. at this point. So like it's just interesting because like the scope of time, they get such a limited amount of it yeah. with their dad. And like, it sounds like they get like from Saturday morning to Sunday
yeah,
evening.
Yeah, it didn't even it sound wasn't like a real even weekend. A
full weekend.
Yeah.
Well, because also they were living in different parts of yeah. the state. So he was driving. And because dad's going to drive anywhere to get yeah. to you and see you, dad's making this big sacrifice. Oh, I'll drive anywhere for him. But you didn't move.
Yeah.
You know,
or
like,
or you didn't call every other day to just know what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was yeah. like, you could see that they're like, dad seemed like this great guy until you really start looking at it.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, even when he lived in the same city, it was still like once every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It never changed. Yeah. Yeah.
So the physical distance may have been representative of his emotional distance from the children. Oh my God, oh my God. Movie's so deep. That last bit of the movie, I think, is probably the best summary of this movie for me. Man, we should really seize the moment. Yep, and then no one ever does.
The moment seizes you.
It didn't, though, because if the moment had seized them, they'd have been fucking on that rock while those other two howled like wolves watching. That would have been the moment.
I think that's what happened.
We don't see it, so it didn't happen.
Yeah, but he was only a boy then. Once you saw that look in his eye, it's like,
yeah, all once right. he was hungry like the wolf.
Yeah.
That's the game next on. Movie, Manhood. It starts there.
Yeah, Duran Duran.
What's that? Drinks on Tony? Kayla's in the chat room.
Oh, fuck.
If you were here.
She was dead.
Or she was. I don't know if she still is. I had that screen away for a while.
Nah, she's still here. It's
she's still, yeah.
Typical.
I think this was a bold choice in making a movie this way.
It was cool to shoot it this way.
Mm-hmm. Was there any interesting trivia? Because I still haven't looked at any of it.
Not particularly.
I'm curious about the financing of doing a movie like this.
They couldn't. Everybody had to volunteer to do it.
Okay.
Because they couldn't contractually
yeah.
keep the kids doing something over 7 years
sure.
in California. Linklater's daughter hated it and said she didn't want to do it anymore yeah. and asked him to kill her character. But he's like, I'm not doing that. And then she got back into it.
So the sister was his daughter. I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
That's where I got the 14.
And she yeah. plays like she plays a far less of a role towards the end than in the like in the beginning she was almost taking over, but
like
yeah.
the like at about the 2/3 of the way movie through the movie point, I can probably see that's about where she mm-hmm. might have mm-hmm. because
that, yeah.
because like she kind of fades into the background really quick at that point, mm-hmm. but then she kind of comes back toward the end. Like there's a
moment
where
end,
she comes back.
According to Richard Linklater, Everyone Wants Some is a continuation of Boyhood in terms of beginning right where it ends with a guy showing up at college and meeting his new roommates and a girl.
Yeah, I have a desire to see that.
It was shot over 45 days.
Christopher Nolan revealed this film was his favorite of 2014, despite himself directing Interstellar in the same year.
That doesn't surprise me, because I know a lot of creators that by the time they're done with their own work, they just fucking hate it. Yeah, they just don't even want to look at it anymore for a while.
Barack Obama's favorite film of 2014.
Well, there you go. The untitled 12-year project. Then became just 12 years. Then when the film was finished, he changed the title to Boyhood to avoid confusion with 12 Years a Slave.
God. Yeah, that's probably good. That's probably a good call. So when they're at the baseball game and he's talking about how he passed his actuarial exam, I thought he was just making that up. Like,
yeah,
it was just something he told. He's like, oh, I just passed my actuarial exam. And then, like, later he's actually an insurance salesman. It's like, oh.
But insurance, you don't need to be an actuary to sell insurance.
Yeah.
You need it
to, like, do quotes.
You.
Or not do quotes, but to.
To actuary. Yeah. To do the actual. Like,
yeah.
I've taken an actuarial exam. You're not fucking around.
You know, I've heard those are hard.
It's a bitch. It is so tough.
Yeah.
So when I did it, I was a sophomore in college. I had just finished differential equations. I was taking differential equations and got an A in DiffIQ. Mm-hmm. Like, I got a C in Calc 1, mm-hmm. and then Calc, like, my grades steadily progressed. By the time I got to differential equations, I aced it. My ex-girlfriend and I, who actually the one I was telling you about the other night.
Okay.
She and I, by this point, we had stopped any pretense of anything romantic. But we were at that interesting place where exes are, where, like, you can say anything to each other, and, like, you're not offended. And, like, you can be aggressively mean to somebody, and it's just like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and it's not hurtful. It's just, you know them that well.
Yeah.
But you're over it. Like, we studied 3 nights a week, at least, for, I think the shortest study session was, like, 4 hours.
Oh, God.
Every time. We started during spring break.
Ew.
We started during spring break, and the actuarial exam was just after finals.
Yeah.
And we were told, there's no way in hell you're going to pass this. None. You have not put in nearly enough time studying for it. We both did. And it was they do their grading in the, they do like a sliding bell curve thing where if you get lucky and take it with a bunch of morons. Because they do
Why are you pointing at me?
you'll pass.
Yeah.
Because, they do a percentage of everyone that takes it passes.
Huh.
Period.
That's a good business strategy. You hire a firm. You all register for the test on the same day. Everyone else from the firm fails it. Guaranteed.
So technically, I was an actuarial fellow because I passed the first test.
Okay.
The first test is mostly calculus-based. Okay. The second test is where the heavy statistics came in. And I actually started in actuarial science. Like, for a while, I was going to U of I for a major in actuarial science.
That's when you dropped out. That's when amateur I dropped porn.
That. Yeah.
I mean, the call of amateur porn
quick cash.
Yeah. Most importantly, I don't know if everybody else caught this. I did. The cartoon which Mason was watching as a child was Dragon Ball Z.
I did catch that.
Specifically, DBZ Season 8, the Majin Buu Saga.
I actually recognized that character on the screen because that gigantically fat character was on the screen.
This is not trivia, but was hilarious. On Mason's wall when he's a teenager, there's a poster for Bad Religion, and it's Jesus. And it's, even Jesus loves Bad Religion. I appreciated the poster. Well,
I was just scrolling through the trivia to see if there was anything else interesting.
I'm going to say this. I'm sure no one else here is going to believe me, but it is absolutely true. I made a much better Harry Potter than the kid they showed dressed as Harry Potter.
Okay.
Guaranteed. I'll find you the newspaper.
I've seen the picture.
I've seen it. And I was actually, well, whatever.
Did it make you feel things?
During the 12-year shoot, both Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette actually experienced divorces, remarriage, and had another child. The girl that Mason meets in the end of the film is named Nicole. When Mason got his hair cut, the girl that passed him a note was also named Nicole, though it's unclear whether this was the same girl.
I don't feel like
it was. I don't feel like it was the same girl, but man, and Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince book release was another hint to the timeline.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that.
The timeline for me was immaterial. It was post September 11th, and I don't think anything else mattered. The timeline mattered. Because, like, absolutely nothing ends up being, like, no current events ever matter.
No, and I can't think of anything during that period that would have probably risen to a level of, like, the most notable thing was when they were putting out the posters for Obama, Biden. Like, and I can see them, that being memorable. Mm-hmm. Just that they were doing that in Texas.
Yeah.
Like, that's what struck me is, like, they're doing that in Texas. Yeah. Like, I love that scene where they're walking away. It's like, that guy's got a Confederate flag. It's like, yeah, it's Texas. What?
Yeah.
Like every other house had them, don't they?
Don't play like that's a Texas. I was walking through my neighborhood yesterday and there's two houses with Confederate flags.
There's somebody that has one on the other side of town.
Like, what are you doing?
I think maybe for kids who grew up in the middle of Houston.
That seemed a little...
And then in San Marcos, which is super liberal, I could see, like, that being weird. I mean, the minute you, like, leave town.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like growing up in Tennessee. You didn't have a lot of Confederate flags in Memphis.
Oh, right.
The minute you leave it,
yeah,
it's a different story. Yeah. And so
it's a different country.
But, like, teenagers won't understand that. Yeah. But Alabama doesn't have, like, big... Well, number one, Alabama has the Confederate flag on its flag, state flag.
Well, yeah.
Or
perfect.
Did. And then... Well, wait. Actually, I take that back.
They have a huge statue.
Well, yeah.
On a cliff that you you can't help but drive past because we drove past it both to and from Florida. It's like, Confederate monument. It was like, what the fuck is that?
Well, and in the middle of Memphis in like one of their big, essentially like, it's not as big as Forest Park, but Overton Park, which is a little bit like the analogous thing. They had a big thing of Nathan Bedford Forest that got torn down recently. But yeah, I mean, you just didn't see them that much in the city. Partially, I mean, it's a half black city, just like St. Louis.
Yeah.
But then as soon as you like moved into the suburbs and then into the, you know, but teenagers don't have that kind of like mental awareness to sort of get that.
No, like I'm aware of that just because like there are places that we go three times a month, like hop in the car and go to them. Then when I hand the keys to Holden, when we're going to practice driving, okay, we're going to go here. He'll pull out of the driveway and go, where do I go? It's like,
what?
Don't you pay attention when we go places?
But people who don't drive don't.
No.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Although I'm surprised. I don't know. Once I sort of got the driving bug in me,
he doesn't have it. He still doesn't have it.
Like the minute, which was about 14, I had the driving bug for a really long time. I was like very into how to get places and where you merge and changing lanes and
he's got a healthy respect for being behind the wheel. He is not good at it.
Ooh.
That took a turn.
He didn't end the way I was expecting.
He knows his checklist of things that he needs to watch for while you're driving, and he treats it like a checklist.
Okay.
Oh. Instead of being situationally aware,
just go straight down.
I need to check each mirror. I need to check my turn signals. I need to make sure I'm in the right lane. I need to make sure there's not a car coming straight at me. We took him out driving one day, and we're heading down a ramp. We're heading down a ramp onto the highway. And it's one of those long arcing ramps, and we're working our way down it, and we're probably like a 10th to a 20th of the way into it. He starts looking down at the highway, looking to see if there are cars coming that we're going to merge into.
Oh my.
I'm like, we need to not go down the ravine.
Yeah.
Let's get toward the bottom until we're going straight again.
Then start working that out.
Yeah. And that's, but that's just the way.
And that's time and it's a lot of driving.
And that's just it. He doesn't have the interest. Yeah. It's like every time we're out somewhere, do you have your license with you? Nope. Okay. All right. Well, his permit, because he doesn't have a license, but
Yeah, no, that's just an hour's behind. Because I was the same way, and I wasn't allowed to get a license until I was 18 because of the insurance costs. And so, basically, like, when I started driving, I was, like, driving myself to college classes.
Oh, yeah.
And I got pulled over twice my first semester in the middle of the day, and the police thought I was drunk. And I wasn't. I was just driving.
Not those times.
I was just driving.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, God.
Yeah. I got my license the day I turned 16. Could not fucking wait. I bought the car the week before.
Wow.
So I was just ready.
Yeah.
It was a stick shift. Never driven a stick shift. Took it to school the next day. Disastrous.
Yeah.
In traffic. But guess what? You learn to drive a stick shift really fucking quick.
Yeah. Holden still thinks he's getting the charger. And this debate. There's like this debate right now that it's like, I want him to have a good, secure, sturdy vehicle. That car is rock solid. Like it still runs great. It's 10 years old, but it runs great. Yeah. It's a nice, heavy steel frame.
Oh my God. I can remember when you got that car.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. We got to break up, Tony.
the problem here is that it's holding its value ridiculously well.
Yeah. So it's your GTO.
I may have been looking at Challengers today.
Oh boy. You and Walt.
They make one in the color they refer to it as is Go Mango. It's orange. I love my favorite color is orange, and that orange Challenger looks really sweet.
Oh.
So I've had this thought. The General Lee from Dukes of Hazzard was good problematic. Lord. But if I get an orange Charger or Challenger.
Oh, no, I see it.
All right. So I'm going to cosplay my car, but not as the General Lee. I'm going to get a Rebel flag, a Star Wars Rebel flag. It's going to be the General Leia.
Wow.
And it's going to be 77 instead of 01.
Wow. Wow.
But I was also looking at a Mazda 6 today.
That should be,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Get you a Tesla over
the
there.
The one with the black stripe is really cool, though.
Yeah. The other problem I have is I'm not crazy about two doors.
Oh yeah, that's a.
The
that's
challenge, always the a challenge, the Challenger is a two door. The Chargers are still four doors. But there's also like a $5,000 difference. The Challengers are cheap. Well, actually, it's not $5,000. Like once you get to the higher models, like a $5,000 at the. Like the lowest build, it's like $1,000 difference. But the Challenger's cheaper all the way down the line. Those doors cost extra money, apparently.
You don't have to convince me, Tony. Listen, you always want someone to be a yes man for buying something expensive. I'll always tell you to do it.
I know you will.
Yeah. If you need some advice on how to make your spending out of control.
You're on it.
I am on it. I can bear this burden. All right, what else we got on this movie? Because I'm tired.
I don't think I have much else. I think they were very fortunate that the children acted as well as they did at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they were perfect. I'm saying that they act as well as they did. Because it's especially hard to find young male actors that stick with it.
Hmm. Where did they get him?
They probably got pictures of young Ethan Hawke and looked for children that looked like him.
That would age progress. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. It's a good thing that kid didn't like eat a lot. Mm-hmm. Cause having that slight frame that he has at the end really helps the look.
Yes. Okay. So he's been in a few things since.
Lorelai Linklater is only 3 months older than her on-screen brother. Linklater jokes that he didn't so much cast her in the movie as give in when she insisted on playing the part after hearing about the project. The GTO belongs to Richard Linklater. Which, that doesn't surprise me because when he shows up years later driving that car, I was like, how did they do that? Like, did they garage that car or did they just find another one that looked like it? Because that was actually a moment when I questioned the method that they use. Knowing that it's the director's car, that makes complete sense now. So did you find anything?
No, I mean, I was just looking at, I didn't find anything about sort of where he had done, once they had started, he hadn't really done much yet. And he had some, four sort of really minor things before the end. So Boyhood was his thing, and now he's been in several things since. But I was just sort of thinking about the way he was acting and the whole sullen teenager bit. It's easy on some level to say it's easy, but if he were sort of a professional, affected child actor, doing that well would actually be hard.
Right.
And, but I think in some ways he wasn't. And I think, And yeah, he did a really, I thought, a good job. It was very convincing. And yeah.
All right. That's all I got. I liked it.
I enjoyed it. Now that we've talked about it, I want to see it again. I want to spend a really rainy
block off Saturday a weekend
afternoon watching it again.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen it in one block.
Yeah.
This week wasn't good for sitting down for 3 hours and watching it.
That's not my life now where I have these 3 hour stretches for that kind of thing. But
there are some movies that I actually enjoy more going to a theater for because it's dedicated time.
Yeah.
I'm not going to leave. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to stick.
Yeah.
You're not going to fuck around on your phone during.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's some movies that I don't care about as much. But if it's a movie I really want to see, going and sitting down in the theater to enjoy it is something I want to do. Mm-hmm. Like Mask of the Phantasm.
Yes! Fucking yes!
That shows up every once in a while. That was at a midnight movie not too long ago.
Hell, it's fucking good, so.
It is that good. I actually wouldn't mind seeing Superman on the big screen again. The original.
I fucking hate that movie.
Well, everyone's wrong about something.
The movie's garbage.
You're garbage.
Yeah, but so's the movie.
You're just
garbage, doesn't attract garbage.
You're
garbage is a repellent force.
You're three piles of garbage wearing a trench coat, pretending to be a person.
Well, you're pots and pans sexual.
And spoons.
I haven't listened to that one yet, Tony.
Ah, well.
You're on four, right?
You're in for something, I'm in then.
Cubicle confessions right now.
Is that
Helga's just pulled Belinda into a toilet?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Has the three-way happened yet?
Ah, spoiler! What the fuck?
No, well, no, that's not the interesting part. That's not even close. that's not even.
No. Okay. The three-way that's going to happen hasn't happened yet. But now I'm not going to be surprised.
Well, no, that's not.
That's not, that's, no.
No.
Let's just stop talking about it.
Okay. I'm so I thought I was going to get out of true crime podcasts. I was going to have a limit.
But they sucked you back in.
And I have just gone.
Started 10 more.
Yeah.
But have you watched American Vandal yet?
For real? I have not. No, I just listen to murder all the time. I just dedicate it myself.
Great. She's getting ideas.
Yeah.
I dedicated myself several days ago to just basically listening to every podcast on Jeffrey Dahmer I could.
Wow.
To sort of compare how they handle his, different ones handle his life.
All right.
And, and then one of my new favorites, What Did You Do?, which is fucking hilarious. The voices are incredible. Just started with Jeffrey Dahmer, and it's, they're doing a two-parter, and it's pretty fantastic. But, yeah, so I just, even watching much. I just listen to murder all the time.
Starting off October 8th, sounds like.
Oh, yeah.
Or just any day of the week.
Nah, it's been murder since the spring.
Yeah, and then this one group contacted us about figuring out what happened. It was this actual murder.
Yeah, we're American Vandal's very good.
Especially if you've watched a lot of documentaries. A lot of the true crime documentaries recently. Because it treats it very much as a true crime documentary.
Yeah.
You can see that's where the actor filmmakers were going for their style of making their documentary.
I think I'll like the first season. The second season,
You say that. You watch the first season, and you were like...
That's the way it is. Like, you watch the first season, it's like, all right. Then you watch the first episode, and you're like, I don't know. But then you watch the second episode. And by the third episode, you're like, all right.
All right.
I got to keep going, because it's only 8 episodes. Is it 8?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
I ghost on shows, though, a lot.
So, this is... What fucking time is it? 10:51? Okay. Is it just me? Is this just, like, anecdotal evidence? Mm-hmm. But... Is it, like, predominantly women who are really into the true crime shit?
Yeah.
Because, like, it's only women who are crazily obsessed with this true crime shit.
It's there are a lot of women. Like, it has a very large female following, although I am curious about who listens to a lot of the guy true crime shows, because some of them are really, like, doodly. And I'm like, I don't think that...
Doodly?
Yeah, like, really, like, I'm not talking about, like...
Bro?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Dude, sorry. Bros. No, that's fine.
Dudely.
Dudely works.
Like, and I'm like, I can't imagine women listen to this a lot. So I think there are guys who, but like, I think women identify with it more. You don't have like clubs and communities. Like a lot of the, what do I want to say? My Favorite Murder has this big sort of like fan community around it. The Murderinos. And it's like all women.
Wow.
And you don't really see fan communities of men around.
No, because they're copycats.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, okay.
That's a good point.
But they're not really in community, though. They just do that by themselves.
No, because when they find their community, they just off them.
Oh, okay.
That's competition.
It's a good point. Okay. Tony's just saying that women don't have the follow through.
And so,
no, that's a good question anecdotally, because now that I think about it, like, I know a number of women who are very into true crime.
Like, obsessively into it.
Yeah. Like, I have watched a few of them, and it's like, all right.
Yeah.
But I can't get sucked into them. It just doesn't, they don't, if I want to know something, I don't want it stretched out. I want to just.
Yeah, just tell me.
Tell me what happened, or I will abandon you and go look at the Wikipedia article. Yeah, like. I don't need this long, drawn-out thing. Because a few of them that I've watched, there's clearly a narrative angle that they're going for that doesn't feel necessarily truthful.
Yeah.
Like that there's some angle they're trying to get to, either that the person's innocent and we're going to come up with every ridiculous, implausible reason why they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or that the person... absolutely did it and they got off and they should have been convicted and they're just a slug of humanity because I have some chip on my shoulder about whatever and this person falls into that category.
Well, and I mean, it's one of those things that I feel like is part of why it's interesting to watch a bunch of different handlings of the same one, which kind of partially, and I mean, it's interesting that you say about women in true crime. I mean, it's something I've been thinking a lot about. Like, my age, and because I loved Unsolved Mysteries when I was a teenager, and I loved watching those kinds of documentaries. And then made, in some ways, like, I made a very conscious effort to get away from that once I got into college, because I wanted to experiment with things and do all kinds of stuff and, like, not be scared of the world. And I just made this very conscious effort to take a lot of risks.
Do your own murders.
And not be scared of the world. Well, no, it was mostly, like, beyond Yahoo personals. But, and you can't, like, watch Unsolved Mysteries and then, like, go meet a guy from Yahoo personals. Like, you just can't.
I can't even imagine doing that second thing. It's just
terrifying. If you learned
enough from Unsolved Mysteries to know how not to get caught.
I know, but if
for you to not get caught.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. So I wasn't predatory enough for that, unfortunately. But I've started getting interested in that now. And I don't know if it's like me aging and risk aversion and more fear around crime, even though I'm less likely to be a victim of crime now, of those kinds of crimes. I don't know. It's very weird and strange.
So it seems to me, and this is, again, me just trying to filter out, like, my own anecdotal experience but, like, Making a Murderer came out, and then, like, it was a thing that women were obsessed with. But it didn't feel, like, was that the thing that happened?
I would, I mean, there's Anne Rule. writing true crime long before that.
Sure. Like, I mean, and like, there's a whole TV channel dedicated to it.
And had, like, an enormous, mostly female audience. And I was going to even take it further back. I think your sort of intuitions about this are, I remember being at a conference, like, it was a German studies conference, and somebody was doing a... I mean, it was essentially like she was doing a presentation on 18th century true crime and the discussions around it, because you had a lot of these, like, they were called like gallows pamphlets. And it was basically a long discussion of what the person did, their gruesome crimes, and then like a deep, detailed thing of like how their neck cracked and all that, like, uh-huh. in the gallows. And women were huge into it. And that was one of the criticisms, is that like mostly women liked it. And there was a lot of concern about women reading it while they were pregnant.
What?
And, well, because then, you know, that sort of passes on to the baby. And then, like, what's wrong with women that they're so into this? And just, like, another sign of, like, how sinful women are. And so...
We all knew it.
Of course.
So, I feel like, the whole women in crime thing...
That's just always been.
I think, I was talking about it a few years ago with a friend. And it's sort of, in some ways... Since women often are, you know, the kinds of personal violence are often, like, see themselves as, like, potential victims of personal violence. And that way, that sort of obsessing over people who perpetrate it is a way of, like, getting power. Yeah. I mean, that could be one theory.
I got about halfway through the first episode of Making a Murderer, and they started talking about him throwing cats into a campfire. Oh, and I was like, you know what? This guy deserves the death penalty. And then I was out, and I was like, yeah, this true crime stuff is just not interesting.
No, I have a lot of discomfort with it, because it has made me a lot more black and white in my thinking, I feel like, in the last several months. And yeah, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Hmm. I have some like mixed feelings. And a lot of times, like, police are the heroes, which I'm not entirely comfortable with all the time. And yeah.
I think, to your point about Making a Murderer, though, I think that... I think that it popularized the genre for the next generation, because it was accessible through a medium that they're more familiar with, mm-hmm. that they're more comfortable with, that they can binge, that they can engross themselves in it in a way that somebody like Julie will go seek it out, because she already understands and she knows that she has an affinity for it. Mm-hmm. So she's painting her nails, and there's nothing on the DVR that she wants to watch, so she'll put on True TV and watch whatever's on. Or
That True TV channel is just fucking dreadful.
It's not for me. It is not for me at all. But I know it exists. Like, there's, yeah.
It's the True Crime
TV station. True Crime TV station.
Oh, it's rough.
I bet it is.
It used to be on in the house
almost all the time. It's almost exclusively this type of show. And
this channel?
No, I get rid of cable.
Like, then there are things like 60 Minutes and 48 Hours and To Catch a Predator, and like the America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
These were all shows that just built on that genre in different ways. It was all different ways to spin it. 60 Minutes had other stuff, but it also had a lot of true crime stuff along with 48 Hours and
Well, and there's a lot of overlap of true crime and then like paranormal, mystery type stuff too.
Yeah.
An audience, as well as like, because Unsolved Mysteries for a while would like go into crop circles and all of that sort of thing, and the odd alien.
Yeah. I watched Unsolved Mysteries occasionally for that stuff. Okay. Like the true crime stuff.
Okay.
Pass.
You know.
Tell me there are fucking aliens. Where's goddamn Bigfoot found this week?
It's so hard to do aliens right.
Yeah.
I mean, I know this sounds trite, but I enjoy a good alien documentary myself.
I used to
watch the shit out of those.
Like, I feel like in the 70s, decent alien documentary is going to be one like about the Fermi paradox,
or what about the alien autopsy video?
Yeah, what about it? You know, it's... All right, never mind.
No, I like... Documentary for me is firmly lodged in air quotes. Don't get me wrong when I say alien documentary.
But, I don't like documentaries in general, so...
I just... But a lot of them are just really not great. They just, like, and I'm not talking about accuracy or anything. I'm talking about the way things are presented. I just sort of need my aliens a certain way.
I don't like documentaries for a couple reasons. One, they never get to the fucking point quick enough. There's always some bullshit surrounding information. Two, they give you a medium depth insight into the topic, like enough that you can stand around and talk with other people to prove you watched a documentary on it, but not actually like a solid understanding of whatever happened. I don't need that in my
life. Well, that's why you watch documentaries with the internet open. Ugh. And you just, like, toggle between the documentary and the internet.
It's like being back in school.
And that's, like, how I spend my nights with, like, paleoanthropology documentaries.
Whoa.
Now you know how I spend my nights.
Curl up on the couch with the cat and the bunny.
Exactly.
Letting the mice play.
Yep. The rats. And...
the rats.
Yeah. Learning more about Neanderthals.
No, rats always seem really, like... I know that this is not the thing.
What?
But it seems like mice is the polite way to refer to rats, even though I know they're different animals.
Yeah.
No, like, and my rats are not polite. I told you, like, my one rat was raping the bunny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll do that, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like,
I'm not a stranger to this.
The bunny's not, like, scared of anything except for that rat. Like, as soon as, like, Mint runs out, like, poor Clovis is terrified.
Wow.
Because it's going to happen to him again.
You know what she asked? She asked me the other day. We finished Appa's Lost Days. Should I rename Clovis Appa? Oh boy.
We refer to Rocky as, Julie does more than anybody, refers to him as the rat.
Mm-hmm. He's a hamster, right?
He's a hamster. A robo hamster, yeah.
Robo hamster. What is that?
Cyborg hamster.
Robotovsky's hamster. That's like, it's like there's actually there's like a Russian word
S name, yeah.
Apostrophe S hamster. Right. They just refer to him as robo hamsters. They're little guys.
Okay. Now these are like rats about this big.
Yeah.
They're kind of fun. I probably won't get rats, but they're all right. They're okay.
They've ruined me for rats.
I've had guinea pigs in the past.
Guinea pigs are cute.
Yeah, I like guinea pigs.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought I was gonna
noisy.
Yeah.
They squeak.
I thought I was gonna teach the rats things, but I just don't have the dedication.
Mm.
But the rats ended up teaching you things. Finally, the teacher has become the student.
My blind sensei, albino rat.
Well, this is how a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles situation begins. All right, we got to get out of here.
Yep. All right. Next time we will talk about what happened at Sausage Fest. If we can remember.
Yeah, it'll be a true crime podcast.
We'll piece it together. Maybe by then Kayla will be back. She may or may not remember also.
Should I, like, come to the aftermath on Saturday night or Sunday and, like, look for forensic evidence, take video?
Probably.
Shine a black light.
Oh, don't do that. Nobody wants that. It is a functioning hotel after all, because
right.
God only knows. Like, maybe we should do that on Friday.
Okay.
Friday morning is a baseline. Just to get the baseline.
Yeah.
Don't do it.